Hello, it's Thursday, March 16th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing Radio, which can be found at www.wingtv.net. Today we have one of the most important figures, we believe, in the 9/11 truth movement today. His name is Professor Jim Fetzer. He's been on this show many times before. He's the founder and the co-chair of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. I'm sure many of you know that. He's also a distinguished professor of philosophy, and he's the author of such books as The Great Zapruder Film Hoax, Assassination Science, Murder in Dealey Plaza, and also American Assassination, The Strange Death of Senator Paul Wellstone. And what he's done, before we bring Jim on, I just want to say that what he's done for the 9/11 movement is give it a shot in the arm. He's given it a sense of purpose. And as we saw at their press conference last Tuesday, is he's giving us not only credibility and unity, but they're doing something. So we'd like to welcome Professor Jim Fetzer to Wing TV. How you doing, Jim?
Hi, Professor.
Oh, just fine, Victor and Lisa. It's a pleasure to be on with you again.
Oh, the feeling is quite mutual, and we're very proud to also call Jim our friend. Anyway, Jim, we went to Alexandria, Virginia the other day to see this press conference that you and Phil Berg and Colonel Nelson were holding before the mainstream press. In hindsight now, what were your impressions overall of what happened in Alexandria the other day?
Well, here we were confronting a battery of mainstream press outlets. I mean, we had representatives there there were at least a dozen video cameras. We actually gave our presentation using a portable lectern that Phil Berg had brought along that he has used in campaigns. And a technician there suggested we have it up close so that the mics would be above the edge to make sure that the sound would be just fine. We gave our presentation, which I predicted we would take 30 minutes. We were almost exactly 30 minutes. We had just exactly one question from, ironically, the same sound technician who wanted to know the motivation as to why these things would have taken place. I covered a lot of the general issues, setting things up, and discussed contributions from at least a dozen of the members of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. The colonel talked about his observations about the crash sites, given his extensive experience with crash investigations. And Phil Berg talked about certain legal aspects of this and hammered home the point that if the administration let it happen on purpose, then they made it happen on purpose, as well as the Norman Mineta testimony about observing Cheney in the bunker beneath the White House while this plane was coming in, and where a young aide was reporting, it's 50 miles out, sir, it's 30 miles out, sir, it's 10 miles out, sir, do the orders still stand, where Cheney nearly bit off his head, asking him, you know, have you heard any differently? Of course the orders still stand, where the order stunningly appears to have been orders not to shoot down the plane. I mean,
right.
The Pentagon, after all, has got to be one of the most heavily defended buildings in the world. If they were going to shoot it down, they would have shot it down. The aide displayed a lot of anxiety he would not have displayed otherwise. Now, my impression in answer to the question is the mainstream media had ample opportunity to cover this.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that they will. It may be that the initial reports, which have been few and far between, where your own coverage has been the most extensive to date, is superseded by what may yet happen. We will see.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Jim, I want to ask you a question about the media, but beforehand, give everybody your website addresses, not only to your personal one, but also let people know how they can find the Scholars for 9/11 Truth.
Sure, Victor. Scholarsfor911truth.org is the one way to get there. Scholarsfortruth.org will also get you there, but the simplest and easiest to remember is st911.org,
mm-hmm.
st911.org. And if you go into the press release category, you will see not only the statement that I gave, but also an announcement of our press release, of our press conference to be forthcoming that gives a summary overview. And indeed, on our home page, you will find the coverage which has been given to this by Wing TV and by a Michael Collins Piper interview with Lisa where they were discussing the press conference. So I'm very pleased for the coverage you've been giving to us, which is greatly appreciated.
We're honored to do it.
And also, Jim, it's assassinationscience.com. Is that true?
Well, now that's right. I have, you know, in the past, in addition to my traditional academic work, and you can find my academic homepage. If you go onto Google and do a James H. Fetzer, it'll show you my homepage. page, and it begins by saying, you know, James H. Fetzer was born in Pasadena, Bob. That's how you'll know there. That's a little technical one, so I give it to you that way. But also I have a public issues website, assassinationscience.com, that's devoted to a whole lot of issues that matter to the nation. And there's also a lot there about the assassination of JFK, the assassination of Paul Wellstone. There's also studies about 9/11 and so forth. I have yet a third website, which is assassinationresearch.com, which is a journal for advanced research on the death of JFK for those who are especially interested in that subject.
Very good. Now, Jim, we were talking about the media, and as you stood at the podium, you looked out and you saw these members from CNN, from Fox News, the Associated Press, the local D.C. affiliates, AP, and so forth. And when you looked in their eyes, and Lisa and I also noticed that one woman, when she was taking notes, there were tears welling up in her eyes. So she knew something was fishy was going on. When you looked into their eyes, what do you think they're thinking? Because they know there's these constraints on them about certain issues that they're not allowed to report on.
Well, it's a curious phenomenon, Victor. I had the impression that most of those who were present were technical people, you know, camera sound, video sound people, and that they were making recordings that were going to be sent to their editors and so forth, who would then make the decisions. So I felt that they were doing their jobs. There were a few reporters who actually were writing furiously. I was impressed. I'm confident I know which woman you mean. And she was taking copious notes, which I think was terrific and a good sign. It's a question of how much filtering takes place, because right now, you know, the media really dominated by a small number of corporations, and they're in bed with the Bush administration. I mean, we're in a situation where the form of government is well described as corporatism. Mussolini described it as the merger of big business with big government, which features nationalism and militarism. The leader tends to be identified with a state so that any criticism of the leader is viewed as unpatriotic or even treasonous. I think that's very much where we are today, where the government has been placed at the disposal of the multinational corporations, and anything that affects their profit margin is something that we take steps to cope with on their behalf. Mussolini acknowledged, by the way, this could also be known by the name of an equally well-defined fascism. So what we seem to be encountering today is American-style fascism, and that obviously includes filtering the news. I think the American people are the most ignorant about the facts regarding 9/11 of any population in the world.
We agree. We agree. Colonel Nelson asked a number of questions during his statement, including why weren't we allowed to see the physical evidence from any of the crash sites, and how come there aren't any accident reports filed for the 9/11 flights, and if so, we haven't been privy to those. Yet, all these things that were coming out, all these revelations, this information, only a sound man had a question. None of the reporters seemed to have any question. Can you comment on the lack of journalistic curiosity?
Well, the you know, what the colonel had to say was really quite fascinating. He and I had about four conversations related to his observations, and some of them I think were quite important. For example, about Shanksville, he said it appeared to him that they'd come out with a bulldozer and dug a ditch and then dumped some trash in it and blown it up to try to make it simulate a crash site, but he thought it didn't bear any facsimile or relationship to a bona fide or genuine crash site. He also was very skeptical about events at the Pentagon, suggesting that in order for that plane to actually have hit on the first floor would not only have been a remarkable feat of flying, but almost certainly would have involved plowing up the grounds with those big engines in order to get that low. I mean, the plane is so high that getting a little entry point in the Pentagon would have required physically impossible feats, not to mention that he observed there was just no remnant and debris from a 757 there. His observations about the absence of NTSB crash reports are extraordinarily important, because the federal laws, the absence of those reports means federal laws have been violated by the agency that's responsible for enforcing them. And this, to me, is just so typical of the Bush administration, that it considers itself to be above the law. The president wants to impose his interpretation on legislation. When he signs it, this extraordinary idea of the unitary executive, where the president has powers that transcend the Constitution, is all completely and totally disgusting. So I thought the colonel made some very important contributions, and I would sure like it. I mean, he's such a a decent, low-key, affable guy. I mean, not only did you have the three of us covering very different aspects, but you had very different types of background and personality and temperament, which I thought made it extremely interesting, if only it would be covered.
We agree.
Yeah, we are very much enjoyed having our talks with Colonel Nelson. Now, Jim, since you're a professor of philosophy, I want to ask you a question on this level. We know that there's been staged, state-sponsored acts of terrorism in the past, like OKC and 9/11. We know that the government has lied about certain events, like the Gulf of Tonkin before Vietnam. We also know that certain events were allowed to happen, like Pearl Harbor. All of these were done to pursue a certain agenda. What's the philosophy behind these monsters?
Well, if you mean 9/11 specifically, Victor, I mean, these so-called false flag operations are really intended to manipulate the population by inducing in them the belief that they're under attack. Hermann Göring, an advisor to Adolf Hitler, described during the Nuremberg trials how easy it is to induce the citizens to give up their rights. He said all you have to do is convince them they're under attack and they will surrender their rights for the sake of security. Mm-hmm. My opinion, of course, is that describing this man, the President of the United States, as the security president is no more than a cruel joke because he has done nothing to advance our security. It would have been very easy if the official scenario or anything like it had been true to simply have allowed standard operating procedures to go forward, and they would have interdicted any hijacked aircrafts, and the failure of that to take place is a profound indication that something was terribly, terribly wrong. And of course, when we have Dick Cheney down here in this bunker manipulating these different so-called terrorist drills, superseding standard operating procedures and preempting normal communications between the FAA and NORAD, you begin to gain a direct insight into exactly what was going on. It's diabolical nature for the sake of political manipulation.
Yeah, false flag operations also, they use them to justify increasing a military presence in other strategic parts of the world, correct?
Absolutely right. I mean, if you go back here historically for 9/11, I think the first serious work about the idea of the United States being the sole superpower and that it could have the opportunity to create an empire greater than the Romans was a book by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, entitled The Grand Chessboard, a book that was published in 1997. He talked about projecting American force around the world and going into the Middle East because that was the most strategic area in relation to the connections between nations, which he was then referring to as the Grand Chessboard. But he said that the American people, who are so accustomed to democracy and non-aggressive attitudes toward other nations, would be very reluctant to support it, either financially or with the kind of sacrifice that giving up their sons and daughters would entail, and therefore it would require some traumatizing event, such as a new Pearl Harbor, precisely the same themes that are then developed on in the Project for the New American Century, which every American can find online. Just put in Project for the New American Century. You'll find a more elaborate version of the sketch that Zbigniew was giving in his book. And this was a document that was published in 2000, signed by 24 of these neoconservatives, so-called, including some of the most important who came into the administration, therefore, with their own blueprint for foreign policy already firmly in place. 9/11 simply gave them a pretext, a way of instilling fear in the American people and manipulating us for their own political purposes, which, interestingly, if you check it, turns out to be the definition of terrorism, using acts of violence and threats of acts of violence to instill fear into a population in order to manipulate them for political purposes, the very essence of terrorism, which means that, in fact, the American government has been practicing terrorism on the American people.
That's right. Well, Jim, when we're down on Tuesday outside of that federal courthouse where Zacharias Moussaoui's trial is being held, I heard you say that you gave about 30 different interviews in the last 6 weeks, which is phenomenal in spreading the word. And I'm sure a lot of these shows get callers in to ask you questions. What kind of feedback are you getting from the American public in regard to what you're saying about 9/11?
Oh, that's a great question, Victor, because the vast majority, the overwhelming majority of calls are people who said they thought so. They were so relieved. They were so gratified to hear somebody saying these things that they've been thinking for all these years. I mean, I got the feeling that for those I was discussing, it was like taking the lid off of a pressure cooker. It was allowing all the steam them to actually feel respectable in their own thought processes. I had a trivial number of negative callers. I mean, if I've dealt with, 100 callers distributed over these, and that's probably a low estimate, it can't be more than 3 out of 100 that would be expressing skepticism or negative attitudes.
I believe it.
So I think on the whole, the response from the American public that I've encountered in giving these talks and discussing these things has been very favorable.
Jim, I just checked the petition at your website just a bit ago before we started the show, and it was at 4,928 signatures, which is awesome. And we are closing in on the halfway mark. We're trying to reach a goal of 10,000. What kind of response are you getting regarding the petition from people?
Well, once again, I mean, that petition is so wonderful, Lisa, and I'm so pleased you mentioned it, because anyone can find it by going to our website right there at the top of st911.org. If you simply read through the petition itself, mm-hmm. you're getting like a case study in how the government is suppressing and withholding crucial evidence about this case, evidence that would very powerfully and directly contradict what it said to the American people. So it becomes very obvious, I think, from merely reading the petition, exactly the strategy, the game that the government has been playing of keeping information from the American people, even when it's so obvious that it ought to be made available, as in the case, for example, of the film recordings were the plane hitting the Pentagon. If the Pentagon had wanted to demonstrate that a Boeing 757 had hit the building, it would have been very easy for it to release the footage. Instead, what happened was, even, for example, the camera across the street at the service station was picked up by the FBI within 15 minutes of the hit. You'd think those FBI agents must have been sitting around saying, well, we got to rush over to that Secret Service station if something strange happens at the Pentagon to pick up their footage. I mean, you'd think they would still be scratching their heads and wondering what in the world's going on here. That Pentagon, if you look at the facade, has a camera about every 100 feet across the whole top, and yet they've only released a small number of frames. Interestingly, a fellow came here through Duluth a couple of weeks ago and showed me some additional footage from a National Geographic program that included many more frames. He must have had at least 40 frames of the fire burning at the Pentagon. And the fascinating thing, as I observed these 40 frames, was the fire all seemed to be in external to and in front of the building.
That's right.
Not emanating or coming out of it, but actually from in front of the building. It was fascinating, and that may be the very reason why they're withholding this footage. But it was odd to me that the National Geographic had some sort of documentary and a connection with the government that enabled it to run more frames than have officially been released.
That is fascinating.
Yeah. Now, Jim, considering how many interviews you've done lately, I wanted to come up with some questions that I was hoping you've never been asked. So here's one. If the culprits behind 9/11, the ones that planned it, that coordinated it, executed it, were all gathered in one room, okay? And you had a chance to go into that room with them, what would you say to them?
Oh, my God. I would want to be bringing in, the authentic military, those who believe in principle, those who are willing to resist unlawful orders and have them placed under arrest and subjected to trial. I mean, back in the days of Sophocles and Aeschylus and Euripides, this is a kind of traitorous betrayal of a people by its leaders that would lead a frenzied mob to drag them out of their beds in the middle of the street and rip them to shreds. It's just the case that here in the United States we believe in due process and the rule of law, so that in fact what we have to do is to go through a formal process called an investigation and a trial to verify or certify that indeed these individuals deserve the punishments that the state might inflict. But as Phil Berg was emphasizing during our press conference, I mean, if Zacharias Moussaoui is alleged or supposed to be entitled to a death penalty for having foreknowledge, which he did not disclose, the case against Dick Cheney is overwhelmingly more powerful, including direct observational testimony by Norman Mineta, our Secretary of Transportation, so that, the perpetrators obviously had foreknowledge, which they have withheld, so that if Zacharias Moussaoui is entitled to the death penalty, all the more so it would appear our vice president.
I would add to that that he shouldn't be hanging from that branch alone, that he had plenty of help as far as that's concerned with the rest of the administration. We saw efforts by federal agents of the Department of Homeland Security when we were in Alexandria to stop this press conference from proceeding. ICE officers. And someone suggested that this is the actions of a police state. Now, I'm thinking here, if we actually witnessed a police state that day, that press conference would never have been allowed to proceed. What do you think?
Well, I think that's a reasonable response. I mean, they came over at the point where, curiously, you guys had showed up and took an interest here. I think they thought there was kind of like enough people here to form some sort of protest, which appeared to be their principal concern. They were under instructions from the judge that protests were not to be allowed to take place in front of the courthouse. I can appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I think that's just fine. I explained to them that we were here to conduct a press conference. I identified Phil Berg, for example, as a former deputy attorney general from Pennsylvania, and Colonel Nelson as a former Air Force officer, and myself as having organized this press conference. And they took my statement and Phil's statement, and they checked us out and apparently got clearance from the judge that we could proceed with a press conference provided there was no protest aspect to it. And so, you know, as far as I was concerned, everything happened in an orderly and appropriate fashion. Mm-hmm. I would have been extremely outraged if, in fact, we had not been allowed to proceed. But as things turned out, we were. And therefore, I'm inclined to agree, particularly because, you know, since it is this Massawi fellow and he is a suspected or alleged terrorist, they had an awful lot of protection, you know, for a block in every direction in relation to the courthouse plaza, which I think all things considered was probably appropriate given, you know, the nature of the trial and that there might be reason to think there might be an effort to turn it into some kind of event.
Well, what I found interesting and somewhat amusing was the comment made to me by that Department of Homeland Security agent where he said, "You have been identified inside the courthouse as a known protester."
Yes.
And I was thinking, is this a bad thing?
Yeah. And, you know, the thing I have to relate to everybody out there is I wish you could have seen Jim Fetzer there and the others, because there was an element of intimidation where they're like trying to intimidate them to get out of the courthouse square.
But the scholars were unwavering.
And as Lisa says about Jim, he packs a mean uppercut. So, Jim, you have to be commended for standing up there and not letting them push you around.
Well, the fact is, in a situation like that, the best way to proceed is in a very low-key, very polite, very cordial fashion. So I simply explained what we were doing there. I mean, there was no way we could out-muscle these guys.
Right.
And if the judge wanted to toss us off the premises, that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I really just explained what we were doing there and let them process the information, being completely non-confrontational in essence.
Right.
There are other contexts where more, you know, a direct argumentative approach works. Here it was more a matter of being simply explanatory and very cordial and conceding, you know, their concerns and explaining our purpose for being there.
Yeah, the sense I got was that they're wound a little tight.
Well, I think
that's probably right, because, you know, I'm not used to seeing these automatic weapons. I mean, that was, you know, that was there was some firepower there.
Yeah. Well, Jim, one thing that we have to discuss is that even though people that listen to Wing TV or watch Wing TV or all of the other alternative media news sites know what happened with 9/11 and Oklahoma City and the Kennedy assassination, but once you get outside these perimeters and you look at the people that are fixed to CNN or Fox News, they still can't accept the truth, and the term for it is cognitive dissonance. Tell us your thoughts on why people can't accept that there is something more to 9/11 than what they're being told on TV.
Yeah, that's a wonderful, wonderful issue to raise, Victor. I have likened it to the mother who wants to deny that her daughter is being molested by her husband. It is so traumatizing, it is so threatening that a psychological mechanism comes into play where you suppress what you have more than enough evidence to believe. You cannot allow yourself to accept it because its consequences are so threatening. I think in a precisely analogous fashion, the very idea that the American government would use acts of violence to terrorize the American people by instilling in them a sense of fear that would induce them to give up constitutional safeguards by allowing a Patriot Act to pass, or by going to a war with nations that have never attacked us by tying it with 9/11 repeatedly, Saddam Hussein 9/11, Saddam Hussein 9/11, when there was no evidence whatsoever that that was true, or now even somehow conceding to surveillance of the American people. And I this is so widespread. I mean, I know the way in which Donald Rumsfeld thinks. He's an efficiency expert, all Robert McNamara. If he's got a way of surveying all the American people and then doing data mining to figure out which ones are having contact with Al-Qaeda, that's what he's doing. It's total information awareness. It's just what Admiral Poindexter brought us. Rumsfeld is very used to hearing Congress complain about a program and saying words that sort of subtly imply he's going to shut it down, and then simply changes the name of the program and continues to do what he considers to be necessary. This is a man who's not constrained by law or the Constitution, and is, in my judgment, even the single greatest menace to American security in our history, with the possible exception of the Vice President Cheney. I mean, we have a very nasty group in charge here. But the American people, I mean, it's traumatizing to believe, for example, in the case of JFK, that the government or elements of the government could knock off the President of the United States, and yet the evidence is overwhelming.
Right.
And similarly in 9/11, I think it is just too difficult to accept at this point in time, and yet it's one of those cases where what you don't know, by God, can hurt you. I mean, anyone who's been through cancer the way I have knows that that phrase, what you don't know can't hurt you, is completely absurd. And what we have here is a form of government that is a cancer on the American body politic, and it must be excised.
Well said.
Jim, we think that it's very critical to keep confronting the mainstream media and the public with this information, such as what was done in Alexandria the other day at the press conference. And so we are also stressing the importance of a Ground Zero rally on 9/11 and trying to get this truth out into the forefront, into the mainstream arena in a big way at the emotional epicenter. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a great idea. Now, the organization of Scholars for 9/11 Truth is basically a scientific and research organization in order devoted to establishing what actually happened on 9/11, refuting the falsehoods and revealing the truths. Many of us, however, believe there's a tremendously important activist component to success here, and would be glad, for example, to speak. I myself would be very favorable as a person to speaking at a 9/11 event at Ground Zero on 9/11 in New York. I think that's exactly the right thing to do. It would not be a society-sponsored function, but some of us would be very grateful to have the opportunity to address an audience under those circumstances.
And many of us would be as well.
Very good. Well, Jim, one last time, I have one more question for you, but give us the website address again for the Scholars for 9/11 Truth.
Certainly. The short address is ST, S for Scholars, T for Truth, ST911.org, O-R-G. ST911.org will get you there, and there's just a tremendous amount of information going on. You have important studies, you have videos, you have audio records, you have interviews, you have papers and studies by David Ray Griffin, by Stephen Jones, by many others. There's a resources page that has a huge amount of stuff about the impossibility of these alleged hijackers having flown the planes or of making those cell phone calls appear to have been staged. All kinds of stuff here that blows the lid off of the case. And I hope everyone listening, if they don't already know the site, will visit ST911.org and encounter the evidence for themselves.
And sign the petition.
Right. And, you know, I remember when this site first came on, and the amount of information now that's on it compared to that first day is overwhelming. So everybody has to go to it. And, Jim, 9/11 is like the ground zero of all these other events taking place. And as I was coming home today, there was more talk about Iran. And you can see things being set up that we're heading into Iran. What are your thoughts on this next step, war with Iran?
Well, these people are geniuses at the politics of distraction. I think that going into Iraq is an insane idea. We have a piece by, Paul Craig Roberts talking about whether or not another 9/11 is in the works in relation to Iran, and I hope everyone will check it out. We put up the most current news releases, the most important items to gain insight into what's actually going on in the world, and this piece by Paul Craig Roberts is an excellent illustration.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for coming on today. It's Professor Jim Fetzer. The organization is Scholars for 9/11 Truth. It's st911.org, and we can't thank you, I think, speaking for everybody in the 9/11 Truth movement for all you've been doing.
Yeah, Jim, we're just so proud of what you and the rest of the scholars are doing. We fully support your efforts to expose the lies and bring the truth forward, and if there's anything we can do to help you, just you know where to find us.
Well, you're doing a great job, for which I'm tremendously grateful, and our really biggest task now is simply getting the word out to the American people and cracking through the mainstream media, and you're doing a very terrific job helping us.
Well, Jim, thanks for coming on today, and just keep up the great work. Now, as we close out the show today, you're going to hear a clip from Lisa's appearance last night on the Michael Collins Piper Show, and he's been devoting a lot of time to this also. So, Jim, thanks again, everybody out there. Until tomorrow, keep your eyes open, because there's a lot going on.
Sign the petition. See you then.
Now, we have some callers here. I want to get started with that. I'm going to come back later for more commentary as it develops. But we have Lisa in Pennsylvania. Lisa, come on up.
Michael, hello.
Okay, I know this, Lisa. I want to tell you, folks, this is Lisa Giuliani from WingTV.net, and she has been called by the federal authorities a known protester. So that means she's in the eye of Big Brother. Now, Lisa's a very good-looking woman, so I'm not surprised that she's in the eye of Big Brother.
Yikes.
But they're concerned not about Lisa's good looks and her bright personality and her sharp mind. They're concerned about the fact that she is taking on the liars and the elitists in our government. So
it's a cycloptic eye, actually. I just wanted to thank you very much for talking about the Scholars for 9/11 Truth petition to Congress.
Yes.
On your show. My friend Michael Langston, who's also a political writer, recorded that for me, and I sent it to James Fetzer and Scholars, and they have linked it on their website.
Oh, great, okay.
And I'm sure they thank you as well, and they're very happy that you did that, and so am I, very appreciative. Actually, we just got back from Alexandria.
I wondered if you guys had come down or not. Yeah, because there's been some fun, there's some funny business. Lisa and Victor Thorne went to the trial of the so-called 20th hijacker. What's his name?
Zacharias Moussaoui.
Yeah.
Right. Well, actually, what we went there for was a press conference that was being held by the Scholars for 9/11 Truth to the mainstream media right in front of the Albert V. Bryan U.S. District Courthouse there in Alexandria. And this was a very interesting event. Even though the sentencing hearing has been halted, it was halted for a couple of days, the media lineup was all there, all mainstream networks. I got pictures of them before the federal agents commanded me to not take pictures.
You're a known protester.
Yeah, well, this was such a strange occurrence, because we were just sitting quietly on a bench. We got there about a half hour, 40 minutes early, before the conference was scheduled. Phil Berg, 9/11 attorney Phil Berg, brought the podium that they spoke at. And like I said, there was an extensive lineup, so we're sitting there, and Professor Fetzer asked me to hand out the press releases and the statements to the press, to the mainstream media people that were there. So I did so. And then I went back and sat on the bench with Victor, and we were just waiting. Next thing I know, these uniformed officers come up to me and ask to see my ID and Victor's ID and our press credentials. Now, we're not affiliated with the mainstream press, because we consider that a controlled press. They get their press credentials through the White House, through Congress, or through a court of law. And we're a free, independent press. We do our own thing. We choose not to be affiliated with that filter mechanism.
Good way of describing it, too. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the only way I know how to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
So we gave them our Wing TV business cards, showed our driver's licenses. Mine is expired. I don't drive anymore. And then they wrote that information down, went back into the courthouse, and then this is exactly what I was told. You have been identified inside the courthouse as a known protester. And so they wanted to remove us. from the courthouse square beyond their law enforcement perimeters. They had patrol cars set up in all four corners.
What are they afraid of, the truth?
They're afraid of us, I guess.
It's absolutely
just the people. And they wanted to actually stop the press conference. They wanted...
Lisa, we have a break coming up here. Hang on for the break. Yeah. I'd like to keep you on until the end of the half hour here. Okay. Folks, this is Michael Collins Piper here in Washington, D.C. on the Republic Broadcasting Network, getting a firsthand report on the censorship of truth at the Zacharias Moussaoui trial here in the Washington, D.C. area. 911, cover up again. Stay tuned for more. Welcome back. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington, D.C. We're here on the Republic Broadcasting Network trying to bring you a little bit of truth, some facts that you need to know, and we're getting some cold, hard facts from Lisa Giuliani of WingTV.net. She and Victor Thorne just came back from here in the Washington area, and they saw our police state at work outside the federal courthouse in Alexandria, Virginia, at the Moussaoui trial. Lisa, come on back up and let us know what happened there.
Thanks, Michael. I guess where we were was the officer had told me that I was a known protester. Now, these weren't normal-looking police officers. They were uniformed federal agents. They had on their shirts the word police, and underneath that they had ICE. And these are federal agents from the Department of Homeland Security, Customs and Immigration Enforcement agents.
Okay, all right. Well,
I had never heard of ICE.
As far as I know, you're not an illegal alien, but be that as it may, you know.
Well, you know, you never know what that definition is anymore.
Well, that's true, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we, Professor Fetzer and Phil Berg, Attorney Phil Berg, stepped up because they were about to be removed from the courthouse square. What they wanted to do was stop the press conference and have them go beyond their law enforcement perimeters where the patrol cars were at the four corners. And so essentially they were wanting to move them away from the press, and they would have been speaking to buildings and a crane rather than to the media, you know. And so Professor Fetzer stepped up and said, "We have an absolute right to address the press," and he listed their credentials. Colonel Nelson, U.S. Air Force retired colonel, was there also. He was one of the speakers, and each one of them was set to speak for 10 minutes. So this was a 30-minute press conference. Now, keep in mind, all of the mainstream media network elites were there, including AP, BBC, Fox News, CNN, etc.
Okay? All the licensed media, so to speak.
The controlled press, right?
Yeah.
The prison press. So now they're all standing there waiting. They had to get permission from the Zacharias Moussaoui judge in order for this press conference to proceed, because since I'm a known protester, and so is Victor, there was great concern, apparently, that there would be some protesting on federal property, which, to the last of my recollection, federal property still owned by the United States American taxpayers who paid for this property. But anyway, we needed her permission, so we got that, and the conference was able to proceed. Now, what was interesting to me is we were sitting right with the scholars, right near the microphones, and we couldn't hear any of the normal sounds that a person hears when a mic is live.
Okay.
You know, like amplified voices when people speak into the microphone, or distortion, or that little high-pitched squealing sound, or the reverberation, nothing like that. We were actually straining to hear their voices. So after they spoke, and they did awesome, they did very well, very powerful presentation, they hit on all of the points. You can read Professor Fetzer's statement to the press on their website. We'll be linking to that tomorrow. Their website, scholarsfor911truth.org. And after that, they opened it up for questions from the press. This is where it gets a little interesting. And only one person asked a question. And the question was, why would they do it? What was the motive? And so Professor Fetzer went into this long list of reasons why, including the PNAC report, Rebuilding America's Defenses, and listed, you know, told them that it was a pretext to get us into this war and so forth. And no one else had a question. Not one reporter. They all stood there, mute. These are our media elites, eating potato chips, socializing. There was one reporter we saw scribbling furiously on a pad with tears in her eyes as Professor Fetzer was talking, and we encouraged her to look deeper into it. The rest of them, I don't know what good they are for, because I don't know what they get paid to do. I don't know if the mics were even live. I think they were running video, but I don't know if they were running audio. And do you want to know, they have not reported it on any of their websites on the net.
You know,
and I haven't seen it on TV.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, I'm going to be watching Google News on the Internet just to see if any of it gets reported. But, you know, I've seen some major stories over the years that might be reported in a small scholarly magazine or something like Jane's Defense Weekly, something like this, a major story. And it will never be reported by ABC or CBS or NBC or Fox or any, or the Associated Press or UPI. Like I, you know, like I said in the opening moments of the program here, Lisa, and then there's so many otherwise good patriots who say, well, why are you the only source reporting? Why is it only American Free Press, or why is it Wing TV, or why am I only hearing this on the Republic Broadcasting Network?
Well, I tell you what, I've been sending it around everywhere. We also sent this story that we wrote up. We did our article, actually. We wrote it in the car on the four-hour drive back from Alexandria last night, and we sent it to the American Free Press and every possible website and Internet forum that I could send it to, and we are the only ones reporting it. But that's okay. You know, I mean, it's okay because we're happy and honored to do it. We're proud to do it. We think it's a badge of honor to be known as a known protester.
Yeah, exactly.
And and I have absolutely zero respect for these media elites. There was actually a CNN guy there with a huge camera on his shoulder and a cell phone plastered to the other side of his head. And I went to give him the press statement, and he didn't even want it. He said, no, that's all right. I'm with CNN. You know, and he's a cameraman.
hang on over the break, Lisa, if you would.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Michael Collins Piper. Yeah, we're here in Washington, D.C., where all the news happens, but it doesn't get reported anywhere in the world because all that news that's happening here is bad news, folks. They want you to think these politicians are really great guys, but they're not. Stay tuned, folks.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington, D.C. on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Folks, over the break, before we go back to Lisa Giuliani, who's here with us, giving us a report on Scholars for 911 Truth. I just want to mention something, kind of something interesting in relation to what we're talking about. I heard a commercial for my own newspaper, American Free Press, over the break there, and they mentioned that they mentioned my book, The High Priests of War. Well, I was with the people in our production department today, and we did some calculations today. Now, bear in mind that the average nonfiction book in the United States, these are these books that you see discussed, on Sunday morning talk shows, books that you see reviewed in the New York Times and the Washington Post, in the book sections of your daily newspapers around the country. I'm not talking about books by Stephen King and by Danielle Steele and the books that get books by Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and books that get promoted on Oprah's book club. They sell into millions of copies. Well, folks, the average nonfiction book sells about 10,000 copies. Now, my book, The High Priests of War, on these neoconservative troublemakers, there are now just over 37,000 copies of that book in circulation. That's almost four times as many copies as the average nonfiction book. And my book has never been in a single bookstore anywhere. It's only been promoted by American Free Press and by a couple independent media voices out there. Almost 40,000 books, folks. And you know what? My book, The High Priests of War, has never been reviewed or mentioned in any of the big media in this country, but more people have read my book on that topic than probably any of the other books that you've heard about, except for maybe one that might have been promoted by Oprah. So this just goes to show you two things. Number one, that the establishment media does cover up things. They do suppress the existence of independent books and independent voices, like the Scholars for 911 Truth, who can be found at scholarsfor911truth.org. And the sales of my book also show that, yes, those of us who are out here, people like RBN, people like American Free Press, WingTV.net, we are reaching out and reaching a lot of people around the country. And thank God that although the big media ignored Scholars for 911 Truth so far as we can see, there was an independent media voice there, Lisa Giuliani and Victor Thorne of WingTV.net, and they've spread that story out probably now all over the world, and I'd like to think that people all over the world are now hearing about it here on RBN and RBNLive.com. So, Lisa, we have a couple other callers that want to jump in here. So if you have any concluding remarks or want to wrap it all up, please jump on here.
Well, I just want to thank you again. And we are closing in on 5,000 signatures on that petition to Congress. So please, if you haven't signed it, do so. And we are urging everyone to show up at Ground Zero on 9/11 for a massive push for truth. This is our last chance. These are the brightest lights we have to expose the truth and the lies about 9/11, and I hope you'll all stand with us. Michael, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa. Thank you very, very much.
Take care.
Lisa Giuliani of WingTV.net, a great, great news source.